Okay, infrastructure is in the news for a variety of reasons. And if you look at the gist of it, essentially we are watching an explosion of demand for infrastructure around the world for several reasons, which I'm going to talk about. But it's happening at the same time that the 30-year bull market in government municipal bonds is either plateauing or coming to an end, which is and has been the primary source of financing infrastructure. So demands are skyrocketing just at the time that the traditional sources of financing it are going away. And it wouldn't surprise me if that expectation, the expectation of that dynamic, was one of the reasons we saw the financial coup d'etat, the essentially the people running the planet saying, we're going to pull the money out in anticipation of this because we'd rather finance new infrastructure than nursing homes. So I don't think that's an accident. Let's talk about some of the things that are pushing infrastructure into the news. First of all, there's the rebalancing of the global economy. That means when you rebalance the global economy, it creates very different demands for infrastructure in different places. You have growth. Part of that is growth in the emerging markets. To keep that growth going, that's putting tremendous stress on their infrastructure. They have to build out the infrastructure going forward. And again, more investment in infrastructure and different kinds of infrastructure. Third, we now have 9 billion people on the planet. It's putting enormous environmental stress. Great infrastructure can dramatically reduce our environmental impact on a per-person basis, but obviously it requires design, collaboration, investment, and building out that infrastructure. Fourth, we're making a big push into outer space, and that means building a whole new infrastructure in the suborbital platform, as well as building the infrastructure we need to get into space and, you know, build colonies on Mars. And finally, new technology means you have significant opportunities to adapt your existing infrastructure, build new infrastructure, integrating that technology in it, and also to re-optimize your systems so that you don't need to build new infrastructure. So you can organize your roads and your tolls with smart technology so that you re-optimize how traffic flows, when it flows. Some very interesting things in Australia they've been doing with that. And new technology makes for all sorts of different possibilities. So if you look at all of these different factors together, we're talking about an increased demand for infrastructure. McKinsey just did a study in 2013 and estimated global infrastructure spending between now and 2030 should be about $57 trillion. And I have a chart up that shows the estimate of the sort of where it's, you know, the different areas in which they anticipate that to occur. Roads, rail, ports, airports, power, water, telecom. They don't include space. Space would add more to that $57 trillion. So let's look at some of the variables that are underscoring the importance of societal infrastructure. First and foremost, the U.S. has fallen behind. The U.S. has made significant investment in what I call its control infrastructure of the last 50 years. So we've built underground bases. We put money in space. We've built a lot of money into the information systems as surveillance systems. But we've fallen behind in the traditional economy. If you travel in Asia or Europe, it can be very embarrassing because you feel like you're from a third world country now, not from a first world country. When you compare the infrastructure in America to Singapore or Sweden or Switzerland or other countries that have done a very good job in this area. The emerging markets, as I said, the emerging markets, if they're going to maintain their growth, they've got to build forward into infrastructure. Infrastructure is very much constraining growth in places like India and Brazil. The greatest needs are in the BRIC nations, and they constitute the significant driver for growth within the G20. So now that's interesting because for the first time, if you look at demands for infrastructure, the total dollars are greater in the BRIC nations than they are in the United States. And really, they're greater in the BRIC nations than the United States and Europe, and part of it is you just got a whole lot more people. And so that's a shift in the balance of power, because we now see the Chinese and the BRICS coming together and putting together independent ways of financing infrastructure, and that's a real power issue for the West. Megacities, the global population is clearly urbanizing. Right now there are 27 cities with populations that are numbering greater than 10 million people. If you're going to have that kind of density, then there's a great focus that needs to be made on what's the infrastructure that supports them and how can you re-engineer functions to get great transportation, for example, without everybody owning their own car. And that's why you're seeing things like Zipcar and Uber and many other systems to avoid what would happen if 10 million people in one dense place all tried to have cars. Finally, as we've talked about much on the Solari Report, the Silk Road is part of this because you've got a rising Asia and you've got a wealthy Europe, and the opportunity to build out the Silk Road is just exploding, and that's part of what the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank was about. So, and you know, if you haven't listened to our annual report for that we did in January, I strongly recommend it because we talk a lot about the Silk Road. Finally, the BRICS are, as I said, are leaving the G7 nest, and they've created a new development bank. There's an Asian bond fund, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, a new Silk Road fund company in China. I've put up the links, and you can start to look at the BRICS as they've gotten more frustrated with the IMF and the World Bank and sort of G7 control. They're leaving the nest, and they're putting together the kind of arrangements they need to start doing more of this infrastructure, because they have more than the majority of demand, and they can't wait for G7 or the West to facilitate that demand. They've got to do it themselves. Another issue that I think is important to what we're seeing happen in the conversation about infrastructure and why it's important is the growth of the sovereign wealth funds. You have, I did a review in the second quarter on the sovereign wealth funds, which I encourage you to take a look at. You have more and more countries, primarily countries that have been highly dependent on commodities and natural resources. As they've sold down and extracted their natural resources, they've taken a portion, put it in sovereign wealth funds. As those funds grow in size and strategic importance, they offer an opportunity for long-term thinking about what you need if you're going to get good returns on investment. Infrastructure is absolutely strategically important to getting long-term good returns in the certainly in the equity markets, and to make sure that a lot of bond issues are credit worthy. So infrastructure goes to the heart of the efficiency and the productivity of global society. And so to me, the sovereign wealth funds offer an opportunity because their mandate, and each is different, I don't want to overgeneralize, but their mandate really includes looking at how to optimize investment returns, both in their national area and regional area, but globally. New technology is having an explosive impact on everything. We have much lighter materials that offer lots of opportunities for infrastructure. New fabrication technology makes it much easier, quicker to build things, and disperses who can build them. So it's not only making things more faster to build and at lower cost, but it means more people can get into the game. You also have breakthrough energy technology. I'm not suggesting that it's going to be integrated, but if it does, it's going to have a radical impact on everything, including the cost of everything. Digital systems not only change what you can do with infrastructure, but how you can change the surrounding ecosystem to delete the need to build more physical infrastructure. And then, of course, we have things like robotics and drones. All of this is having a dramatic impact on the opportunities we have to upgrade our existing infrastructure and to build new infrastructure. Communications technology, I think, is particularly important. Anyway, as these new technologies come online in all areas of the economy, that's going to create additional capacity, which could be used to focus on infrastructure. For example, robotics. If you look at how many people who are currently employed who will not no longer be needed once robotics and artificial intelligence get integrated. What that does is that frees up a lot of people to start paying attention to infrastructure. So we're going to start seeing capacity become available, and it's very important to create the opportunity for that capacity to start doing things we very much need. Space becoming a multi-planetary civilization. As I've said many times, the U.S. and Mr. Global have made a commitment to become a multi-planet society. That absolutely means, same as robotics, and I believe it's connected, you need massive increases in productivity in our manufacturing base if you're going to produce the stuff that's going to make that possible. And what that means is we have to have a significant investment of infrastructure if we're going to get that kind of productivity. Finally, we're switching from the what I call the 2.0 to 3.0 economy. I've talked a lot about that in the last two wrap-ups. And then in the third quarter wrap-up last year, I went through all the different specific areas that are going to be real areas of opportunity in 3.0. But obviously, if you go through that third quarter wrap-up and look at the different areas, what you'll see, it clearly changes the, you know, what our vision for infrastructure is and what's possible and what we need.